Welcome to Huron County's Life on the Coast, a podcast series about topics of importance and interest in Huron County. I'm your host, Roz Elliott, with a dialogue about farm succession and transition planning in one of Ontario's largest agricultural economies. In our first three episodes, we explored the economic and social landscape, and we had counsel from a strategic business consultant on the critical conversations necessary to plan an effective transition. Then we heard the perspective of female founders undergoing the succession process. This episode, we steer the conversation to the next generation stepping up to assume leadership and accountability for Huron's vast agricultural basin. Spoiler alert, I think we're going to learn the importance of fairness and how this next generation is mindful of what fairness means to all involved. As we have these conversations, we are reminded of the first people to care and steward the land and resources. They helped us understand this environment. They supported us. We are also reminded of the thoughtful and careful dialogue they have had with their next generations about continuity. Truly a model for discussion. Thinking generations into the future and building on generations of wisdom from before. Well, here today, offering me some next generational insight is Emily Morrison of Morrison Berries and Derek Van Dieten of Van Dieten Farms, and that's a dairy operation in Seaforth. And I want to welcome you both today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Well, I have to tell you both, I have been looking forward to this discussion. As someone who was the last generation to grow up on a family farm after multiple generations, I look to both of you and I see what could have been and what will be. And I just want to begin by thanking both of you for carrying on this important contribution to our economy. It's important work. Well, I want to begin with a simple question, Derek, and I'm going to begin with you. We hear the phrase all the time, born and raised, especially about farm life. What stood out for you growing up on a farm about maybe the lifestyle?
I was born and raised, and I've lived my whole life in Huron County outside of a couple years at college. And we had a great childhood, my whole family, my brothers. But it was a hard life, to say the least. It was, my parents worked, toiled, and we saw things maybe our colleagues or friends in town got to do things that we didn't get to do. And there was some resentment growing up maybe, but looking back, I think we were better off for it.
And your family emigrated from Holland.
Yeah, my dad immigrated from Holland in the late 70s. My mom was born here in Canada just after her parents had immigrated, actually. So I'm the descendants of recent immigrants, I guess.
So. Fantastic. Creating a whole new legacy here in Canada.
We hope.
And Emily, Morrison Berries, you're up near Lucknow Way, Wingham Way. It began with your dad just sort of planting a few strawberries, and it quickly turned into a strawberry farm.
Yeah, that's the fun story I like to tell. Mom and Dad got married in March, and then she came home to find Dad planting strawberries in May. And she said, where was this conversation before we got married? And so that's kind of, you know, right from there. And it just the innovation or the creativeness that my dad had, and to kind of bring in a plant, a strawberry that really wasn't around very much. And, you know, he was inspired on a farm trip to California. So, so growing up, you asked that question, what was it like to be born and raised? And I didn't really connect the dots until I left for school. You know, we were just the strawberry farmers. In my group of friends, there was, you know, My best friend, her family ran 1,000 acres of straw that they'd shipped down to the States. My other friend was the pig farmer. My other friend was the beef farmer. My other friend, you know, had something different. And so I didn't think it was different. We were just the strawberry people. And it wasn't until I left, you know, Huron County and went to school that I realized, whoa, we had something special. And now I can't imagine a life without it now.
It's interesting. I felt that it was in my DNA growing up on a pig farm, a cash crop farm. And I remember it being very idyllic. And I don't think I had a sense of the struggle growing up. I was the youngest. And I have to tell you, there was this broom closet in the kitchen. And that's where I went in to get the yardstick, because you got those great yardsticks from the plowing match. We all remember those, right? Well, next to the yardstick was a clipboard with all the invoices and receipts. And I didn't appreciate as a kid, and I have unreliable memory about this, of course, that clipboard was our financial scorecard. And it was about as tenuous as that paper clip holding those things as well. Were you aware of any challenges growing up, Derek? Did you know that there was struggle or hardship?
No, I wouldn't say I could remember firsthand. Like, we always remember history with rose-colored glasses. So I'm sure it seemed idyllic to say growing up, but I'm sure living it wasn't idyllic. We had a good life. We had everything we needed, but there certainly wasn't extra. And they never it never was imposed upon us how tight things were. But you could always get the sense there was it was a struggle. Like my mom and dad picked 2 acres of cucumbers for years and years, and it was never anything said about that. But that's what they did. And why would they do that if they weren't, you know, if their back wasn't against the wall, right? So looking back, you understand these things a little more, right?
And you said back against a wall. When they first came, you didn't have the successful dairy farm that you have today. They had their hands in everything to make means.
Yeah, my mom was an EA at school. My dad relief milked, and they picked cucumbers. We had sheep. We were a historical mixed farm, would be what you would call, and until we were able to streamline, and yeah, we made a few good moves along the way. So.
And you learned, Emily, and this is difficult, you lost your father early on, and that had to be pretty tough, but that was a bit of your experience growing up.
Yeah, my dad died in a farming accident on the farm when I was 10. And so I look back and I think, wow, my mom, you know, had to keep it going when she lost the person who started it. And, you know, and so you ask, like, did I notice? And it's like, no, I didn't notice. I just thought that's what you do. You just keep going. And then, yeah, when you're older and you look back, you realize she made so much sacrifice for us. And that's where we're at now with our succession plan, is mom invested so much. How can I give back and look after her as she's also trying to give us so much?
That is such a great viewpoint, and what a strong, brave woman your mother is and continues to be. And we want to delve into that in a little bit, because I see that's probably where you get your strength from. So it's the DNA we talked about, the DNA. When your parents look at you, Derek, how did it come to be that you ended up sort of in the process of running Van Deaton Farms with your family?
Well, we run Van Deaton Dairy Farms. There's several different companies that are under, I guess, our family umbrella, you would call it. But we run Van Deaton Dairy Farms. And so I started that with my father right out of college. And so there's a little bit of a different nuance to that. It's not like he ran it for 30 years and then I took over from him. We started it together. We learned, we made all the mistakes together, right? So he had the grace to let me make a lot of $1,000 mistakes, but he was there to step in to stop the $100,000 mistakes, right? So so my experience is a little different in that regard.
Do you have meetings with your dad in terms of when big stuff comes down? Do you make a point of sitting down? Do you have a process or structure?
No, my dad still comes out every morning, and I think he'll do that until he can't anymore. And I have a saying about that. It's he hasn't come for a paycheck in a long time. And he gets paid, but it's my kids are out there, and it's been a long time since he's come for the paycheck. So we don't have meetings, but and he's still a minority shareholder, but he and I hope he is for till he takes his last breath. Because as you age, we talked about this before, as you age, you learn about grace and wisdom, things that I didn't appreciate at 21 that I appreciate now at 38. There's a certain way to his thoughts that you can never replace, right? So
there's wisdom at every age. And you, Emily, you again got into this business very young. You were just in your early 20s, and you and your mom and your brother. But talk to me about what you learned early on.
We did this since I could walk, right? Dad started the farm before I was born, so it's always been a part of us. And when we got to choose what we want, my mom was always very adamant that we could always come back to the farm, but we needed to get an education as a fallback. And so Michael chose, my brother, to go and look at the production side, and then I went and looked at the business side. And so learning that aspect of it, and then also watching the trends, you know, of what people want when they come to the farm, and then going through COVID, like that was even a learning curve there, and seeing how the needs and the wants change. Just being on top of all the innovation, participating in what's coming up in leadership programs, and being able to just adapt and really take a look at what's going on.
Yeah, it strikes me that your demographic is very invested in growth and development, education, technology. Does that differ than, say, how your parents would have viewed the world? Were they, has that ever become a conflict or a difference of opinion?
We don't toil. Our generation won't toil as much. We don't have the labor associated with our previous generation. That's not to say we don't work hard, but their labor was what you could work off your mortgage. That generation, it's probably no secret. I couldn't work a job to pay my mortgage anymore. Like there's different facets of how the business has grown.
Is there a degree of sort of, I guess it's about efficiency somewhat?
Yeah, it's, we've just outgrown the ability to work like we used to. And there was a lot of respect and a lot of value placed on their ability to work in the past. And so that's the only kind of conflict you would see, right? So we've been blessed, or I've been blessed with with parents that understand that. So things change as life goes on. We can't live the way they did.
And for you, Emily, I mean, you had 24 acres of strawberries, and you've sort of invested in technology, and you're doing things far more effectively.
Yeah, granted, my brother, you know, always participating, in like with his choice of studies, it's not the official name, but I always call it the Strawberry Conference, is coming up in February, and going every year and talking to the new people with the vendors and the machinery and the equipment and the technology. And we're so lucky to have Ontario Berry Growers is the official name, community that contracts University of Guelph students to do research for us. So being in touch with those reports and everything that we've been, and this is, you know, sometimes I wonder, what could my dad have done? Because he was the person that was always on the leading edge of everything and wanting to be the person to try something new. And so we have the same production level off of 6 acres of strawberries that he had with the 24. So just by implementing like drip line irrigation and, you know, my brother bought a solar powered moisture reader so that we were making sure that we were watering them enough. And so just different things like that to really make sure that, and that's, I also think of too, is that as an ability to, for our environmentalism on the farm, is that we're reducing the footprint, and reducing inputs. Like we're not overwatering if we've, you know, don't need to. So different tools like that we can implement to just build that sustainability into the farm.
You mentioned sustainability. I'm interested from you both, Derek, is that an important value, environmental thinking, decision making, does that play into how you manage?
It has to. If you look how far we've come in 60 years, you know, my father watched his dad milk their cows by hand in Holland, and our cows are all milked with robots now. Nobody touches a cow anymore. So that really has nothing to do with environmental stability, but or sustainability. Sorry, but it has to do with overall sustainability. Milking fewer cows. There's, you know, tenets of sustainability have to include environmental, but they have to include, you know, mental sustainability, labor sustainability, fiscal sustainability, all these things that it all has to be enveloped into the package.
And that's actually the true definition of sustainability. And that was what I was lucky enough to study sustainability in university. So it's not just about one thing. It's not about fiscal. It's not about only environmentalism. It's and absolutely the health as well of yourself is such a big part of it as well.
Do you think this generation has that wider mindset? Do you think you bring that to the table?
I would say that we've had more resources at our fingertips to maybe widen our horizons in terms of those topics, right? So, you know, before, if you had to go to a library to learn, or what you learned in a book was what you learn. Now we have more in our carrying around in our pocket than like our forefathers or mothers could ever imagine. So I think we're exposed to that much more, that it gives us a little wider breadth of knowledge maybe.
One of the things as I listen to both of you is that gives me optimism is from your vantage point, I just get a sense of you care about fairness. You really care about fairness. You look 360 around you. You look to your parents. And one of the things you said to me earlier, Emily, is you care about your mom and that she has a retirement. And what does fairness mean to you when you look 360 around your family?
Well, I always said I want to be a strawberry farmer. I don't want to be a livestock farmer. I don't want to be a cash farmer. I know me. I need to be doing something that makes my community a better place. And so I was a youth worker before. I'm now taking a different step into the social service realm as an off-the-farm job. Granted, we can talk about how some people need off-farm jobs to supply their or to fund their farm operations, but that's a conversation for another day. But my brother wants to be a full-time farmer. And that's he has not taken promotions at his off-farm job because that would interfere with what he's doing on the farm. And so when I look at the land that my mom had and when it was passed down to me, that I didn't question that Michael would get more land than I would in the succession plan, because I just want to be a strawberry farmer and have this other life too, where he wants to be a full-time farmer and is working to get there. And so what we wanted was different. And so though he needed those needs. And so that it's not a question to me, is that fair or not? Because that helps him. And I'm okay with that.
And your needs are being met.
Yeah.
So that's fairness. And how about your mom?
You know, she gave so much to us to give us the choice and for us to have the land. And so it's how can we give back to her in that succession plan, recognizing again that there's no way we could pay fair market value and then be able to do what we needed to do. So as a part of the succession plan, are we responsible for building her a new house so that she can move out of the farmhouse for my brother to move into, and then she has her main level, you know, doors are extra wide in case there needs to be a wheelchair, you know, those scenarios. And that's a part of the succession plan. I get the land for pennies on the dollar, but then she has free housing, and so that she doesn't have to worry about that in the future.
And for you, Derek, same thing. How do you think about fairness as you look around to your family, your parents, your spouse, your brothers and sisters?
I think about fairness a lot differently now at 38 with five kids than I did at 21. And it's an ever-evolving mindset, I think. You have to take that into account as well. Part of that, I think, would be our whole family mantra since the start has always been a rising tide floats all boats. So the more we can grow, the more we struggle together, keep putting one foot in front of the other, that will make more fairness for everybody. And what that looks like, we don't really know. But when I was younger, I always thought that, you know, I knew what my parents wanted is what I told them they wanted. And that's now I'm starting to have a little more empathetic view to that. What they want might not be exactly what I think, what I want, right? So, and that's changed over time, and it's so there's a little bit of a cautionary tale in there. We talked about that before, about starting succession too early, but how do you need to start it early, but there needs to be some fluidity in there that, you know, people grow up.
We have permission to evolve, don't we? Yeah.
And that's maybe a perfect way to say it. Permission to change your mind, or permission to try something new.
So you mentioned earlier when we were chatting, Emily, offline, we talked about, you know, one of the things you learned is maybe I would allow more fluidity as I was thinking about the transition plan, maybe a check-in or something like that.
Yeah, I think, you know, my personal experience has shown what every consultant or, you know, banker, accountant is begging every other family to do, or why we have this series now, is create your succession plan, because you never know what's going to happen. And so that was, our family plan was made, you know, when I was 14. But when one individual in the family moves faster than the other, whether that's a job, university, falls in love, all those different things, how does that impact what your farm family plan is? Because do you include those new people? Do you not? What does that mean? And then you get to a point when you're older and you feel like you can't back out of the plan you've had for 20 years. And then on the flip side, you say it has to, because how can one move forward? But maybe give each other grace.
Strong word, grace. When I think of grace, I think about the family table. And I think about, you know, when we give grace over dinner often. And we often give grace for our kids. What do you hope for and care about for your kids? What do you hope they carry on at the farm? Or just what experience do you hope they have, Derek?
I hope the childhood we're giving them has some resemblance to the childhood I had. I don't know, you know, it can't be recreated exactly, but family was important, work ethic was important, and it's okay to struggle to, as a team, to a greater goal. And that would be something I'd like to my kids to look back, and I hopefully maybe in 30 years they're on a podcast and they're saying that, you know, maybe they resent us, Jen and I, for a few of the things we make them do now, but in 30 years, I hope they can understand why we live the way we do and they're better for it. That might not mean being farmers. I think hopefully the life and the skills we're treating them will give them a certain amount of freedom. Whether that's in agriculture or not, that's up to them.
Well, I hear that we might have an encore presentation down the road, yeah. 30 years from now. What do you think, Emily? What are your kids? What do you hope for them?
What I love about farming is the simple joys. I love tasting that first strawberry of the season. I love smelling other strawberries in the grocery store and like having them not smell like mine and thinking like, yeah, I produce a pretty great strawberry. You know, that sense of confidence and self. And then I get, you know, so excited when I hear other people taste my strawberries for the first time. Or I see somebody walk out with one, and then 5 minutes later, they come back in and buy three more because they've already eaten half of the first box, you know? So those simple joys and yeah, like being outside and I think, like you said, the opportunity, you know, yes, if they don't become strawberry farmers and they decide not to, will that hurt my heart? But very much so. But at the same time, if it's given them the confidence to jump off or do something different, you know, that's just as good.
Well, I like that. I love this image of comparing the strawberries. I like that in the store. I think yours will be the best. Let me ask you this. If I were to have your parents in here, your mom and your parents, Derek, what would they tell me that they're proud of you about?
I would think that they're proud in the way we've built our businesses, you know, respect to ourselves, respect to our community, respect to our employees, our environment, all those things. I think they'd be proud of the way we're raising our family. We're certainly not perfect, and it's not identical to the way we were raised, but it's, I think they can be proud in that regard, and in carrying on a tradition, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're what they thought that it was going to be. So.
And Emily, as you reflect, if your dad were here or your mom, what would they give you a pat on the back for?
I hope he's happy that I'm just as excited about it as he was. I hope he's happy that I'm still going, still trying, thinking about adding other things in to make it a place where it offers that freedom and opportunity. I hope he's not saying, oh, that was a bad idea, you should have given up 20 years ago.
He's rooting for you, isn't he?
I hope so.
Yeah. If I were to ask you last question, you're sitting around with your cohorts, friends the same age, in the farming life, but they haven't been doing planning, they haven't thought about it. What advice do you give them, Derek? What do you tell them? What's important to get it right?
I'd say we have an epidemic of affluence in agriculture and maybe it's society as a whole. And that doesn't matter whether it's Huron County or Estevan, Saskatchewan. That you've got to have empathy for both sides on the situation because you've got an ownership generation that's seen their net worth skyrocket in the last two decades on one side that maybe doesn't know how to handle this wealth or how to distribute this wealth. And you've got a younger generation that has never seen the struggle that ownership generation maybe had to do to get there. And how do you marry both sides? And that comes with, you know, some resentment or some entitlement issues. And how do you, I'm just lucky I'm of the generation that we were able to see both sides and we maybe caught the last bus leaving the station before asset values have maybe blown up like they did. So. Being able to, and I have a lot of friends going through the process. We have, it's out there. Being able to straw man the other team's argument or the other side's argument. I guess it's not, we're all on the same team, but the other side's argument. Understand where they're coming from with their wants and needs and the way they act. So.
Helpful. Emily, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, a lot of us are scared to talk about it because nobody wants to talk about dying. But I jokingly say to other people sometimes to pick up the conversation is, and what are farmers very good at? Avoiding taxes. So if you need to bring up the conversation, it is very tax friendly to do this stuff before you die because you can get hit with more taxes if somebody dies after. So if you wanted to start, like, have a meeting with the accountant and say, how do I avoid paying lots of tax? Have a meeting with your investment advisor to say, how do I avoid paying taxes, or where can I hide money in my kids' RESP funds? Like, if that is the angle you need to go about to be able to figure out the starting questions, start from that angle.
Break bread over the shared hate of taxes.
Exactly.
Wow, that pragmatist view, that was wonderful. I did not expect that, and I love it. That was fantastic. I'm not going to take away, though, from your words of grace and empathy. Those are strong ones, too, but our shared hatred of the taxman, I think that's a memorable comment. Anything we didn't chat about that you think it's really important to share? Anything we didn't get to?
I would say, you know, it's cliche to say in agriculture, but it can't be said enough, is we stand on the shoulders of giants, right? None of us, we wouldn't be where we are without the struggles that our previous generation had. So if you're going to circle back to what I hope my kids say, is that I hope they say that we stand on the shoulders of giants, if referring to Jen and I.
Emily, what do you think? What, any last thoughts?
Yeah, I think that, you know, just like a regular workplace, you have to get along with your colleagues and in family and farming, because it's so in our DNA and who we are. It's so that much even more important to make sure that you're connecting, communicating with your family and with the people on your team. A great experience I did was I took my brother and we went to a personality weekend together, facilitated by the Rural Ontario Institute. And we found out that, you know, how he makes decisions and how I make decisions are two totally different ways. I kept getting offended by the way he did it, but it was just different than the way I did it. And then he was getting offended when I kept interrupting him with questions, you know, because that's how I needed to frame how my brain works. And so even just simple things like that, circling back to that grace part, giving the opportunity for the other person, understanding how their brain works, because they're such a big part of the team. And you can't, that's where a big trauma comes from, is when your own team breaks down.
Wow. You've given me a great opportunity, the both of you, to really understand this better and to understand your perspective. And it's opened my eyes, and I want to thank you both for that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Today's episode highlights the optimism and hope we have in the continuity of Huron County's vital agricultural sector. Optimism and hope, founded on the thoughtful deliberations of this generation and their partnership with those who have come before them, those giants, and those conversations that have been founded in fairness. In future episodes, we will sit down with the male founders and also those who have joined the family business, perhaps as an in-law or partner. What can we learn from each of their perspectives? If you've missed one of our previous episodes, you can access them on the Economic Development website at hurontcounty.ca/economicdevelopment. You can also get more information on farm transition planning there. And Farm Whisperer Elaine Fraze will be back on February 29th with a farm succession webinar. This podcast is funded in part by the Ontario Ministry of Agriculture, Food and Rural Affairs, and the County of Huron. The views expressed in this podcast are not those of the province or the county. Join us here again with Huron County's Life on the Coast. Thanks for listening. I'm Roz Elliott.